Welcome to the Shutdown Fullcast. I'm your host, not Spencer Hall. I'm Jason Kirk, college football editor at SBNation.com. Joining me tonight is Ryan Nanny, who talks on YouTube.
Yeah, if it's a free distribution channel, I'm on it.
He also talks on Facebook and Twitter.
Yeah, you send me a CNC, and I'll record over it.
If it's an off-platform video vertical monetized for today's new media landscape verticals. Also joining us is Zach from Twitter.
Zach from Twitter. I also speak. I talk, I'm a lawyer, a soccer coach, and that's about it.
Hey, you two are both lawyers. How'd you guys meet exactly?
there's a secret lawyer cruise that happens every other month out of Mobile. It's scenic.
It just got to Cozumel. Yeah.
Zach is here because Spencer is not. And when Zach found this information out, Zach, I'm going to quote you here if that's okay.
Yeah, that's fine.
He responded, if Shutdown Fullcast normally is the godfather, Shutdown without EDSBS is Geely. So my first question for you, Zach, is have you seen Geely?
No, to be honest, I've actually never seen Geely. I've just heard it's a terrible movie. And
have you seen The Godfather?
I have seen The Godfather.
Have you seen The Godfather 3?
I've seen it, but I don't really remember it.
So Jason sort of got to the heart of my first issue, and that is number one. I understand if you want to say that this podcast is worse without Spencer Hall. In fact, I will agree with you. But I just found the comparison confusing because there's no commonality between The Godfather and Geely.
That is true. But I almost went with The Godfather 3, and I don't know. I thought that maybe some people would think that The Godfather 3 was a great movie. Mm. So I just wanted.
Yeah, we can't have them thinking that. We can't have them thinking this is still a great podcast.
I do love this podcast, though. I don't want you guys to get the wrong idea. I mean, I do listen every week.
Okay, Zach,
we don't know why you do that, but we appreciate it.
Zach, we will forgive your transgression with one. If you have one assigned piece of penance,
okay,
and that is in the next month, I want you to watch Geely and give us your honest and I want you to be fair. Your fair review of it. If you think it's garbage, it's garbage. If you think it's 2 stars, it's 2 stars.
I can do it. Have you guys seen Geely?
Hell no. Who would see Geely? What a terrible
idea. I don't even watch
idea.
Tuesday Mac games.
If you guys have me on again, I will come and I will give a very thorough review of the movie Geely.
Okay, well, let's not get ahead of ourselves.
Okay.
We gotta make sure you even step up. And first of all, good luck finding Geely. There's a substantial possibility you have to pay $17 to buy this on Amazon.
I'm pretty sure it's under Atari ET.
So it's on
in that New Mexico cavern.
Zach, of which football team do you count yourself as a fan?
You guys and the listeners are going to enjoy this. Alabama.
Mm, the rarest breed.
Yes.
Okay.
How novel.
Went there for undergrad and law school and, grew up a Tide fan.
Did you go to law school with Bud Elliott?
I don't – what class was he?
Oh, man.
I remember.
This is the thing. I can't – Bud is one of those people that could be 38 and he could be 24. So I don't know. And
he's
realize
younger
that's
than
not
me.
Helpful.
That's all I know.
Okay. So he probably – let's
so think
say
about
he's,
that, Zach.
Let's say he's class of 07, 08, somewhere in that range.
That would have been – he would have graduated right when I started. So I probably – he was probably a third year or 3L when I was a 1L. So
you were following his legal precedent, so to speak.
Yeah, that's absolutely right.
Did you ever hear whisperings in the hallways of the legend of Bud Elliott, attorney at law?
Yeah, there was – it was a lot – there were a lot of whisperings, mostly from the female professors. I don't know what that –
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
and they were all talking about how our strength and conditioning program is garbage.
All right, so Jason, do you have any questions you want to ask Zach about SEC football after week one?
Yeah, that's probably an easy place to start. I mean, we just got through week one. Let's run through a few questions real quick. I figure we can keep it positive, you know, like positive developments from week one. Let's see. Oh. How about quarterback play? Did you see anything on the field as far as SEC quarterbacks go? Maybe how Tennessee did against Bowling Green?
You know, didn't get a chance to watch the Tennessee game because I was in Dallas. Because
I'll tell you, man, Josh Dobbs, that dude is a great football player. And credit to his university, which is a great university, and his football program.
Yeah.
If my team had to play his team, I'd be pretty scared and worried about that. And I'd probably worry about that game in addition to all the ones that come between this game and that game. Is that how you feel?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I think probably Coach Saban is preparing for that one right now. I mean, forget about MTSU and Ole Miss and Georgia. I think he's probably focusing on Tennessee right now.
Well, I mean, Middle Tennessee, by definition, is, you know, it's the diet of Tennessee's.
Yes.
They got little Josh Dobbs, too.
I worry about that defense, though, guys. Tennessee's defense, you give up that many yards and that many points to Bowling Green. And
That's a classic bait and switch.
I mean, how many yards is Heisman contender Jacob Coker going to throw for against that defense?
Wow, who? I mean, I guess look, I'll admit that in the strictest sense that Jacob Coker is an eligible college football player, he is a Heisman contender. I will give you that.
Yes, yeah. You can't see me right now, but my tongue was definitely in my cheek when
that's
I said
fine.
That.
That's fine. I mean, I will even say this, which will make you happy, Zach. He probably had a better statistical game than Jeremy Johnson did for Auburn.
Yes, he did. He did. I heard that. I heard old Jeremy struggled a little bit, but Jeremy himself, he's a self-proclaimed Heisman contender.
All right, let's end our conversation with Zach by talking about, I think, the most important topic from an Alabama fan perspective right now, and that, of course, would be Ohio State's schedule.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Zach, if you had to rate Ohio State's schedule in terms of difficult physical activity, is this helping a friend move? Is this climbing a mountain? Is this, you know, what strenuous thing does the Buckeye schedule compare to?
I would say it's it would compare to a walk of about 50 feet in a 72 degree afternoon.
People get hurt that way, though.
that's pretty strenuous exercise in certain states.
Wow, Jason went there. All right,
I didn't mention any states.
That's fine. He could have met anyone. He probably met Colorado.
Yep, yeah. That's a bunch of fat asses.
Zach, any last comments or questions you want to add before we let you go?
No, just, you know, I came here, you know, I came on the podcast because I thought y'all were going to surprise me and have Spencer on so that he could answer some fantasy football questions for me. But sadly, I'm disappointed that he's not here to answer those.
Wow, maybe he's still dropping bombs on us.
We'll give you his email. He's very excited to respond.
Loves email.
Zach, before we let you go, can you give us one good Roll Tide, please?
Roll Tide.
All right, so that was Zach. Thanks to him for joining us and for hating on Twitter. Hope he
powerful lesson
to
there.
Use a ladder.
Yeah, I mean, hate on Twitter and people will respond to you.
Big things can happen. That's how Peter joined the apostles.
We're so goddamn stupid. People are nice to us on Twitter all the time. And we never like, hey, come on the podcast. Somebody talks shit and compares us to a Ben Affleck movie nobody saw, and we're like, all right. Here's your chance.
Well,
say your piece.
It's inefficient to try to, you know, to try to bring in the ones who are already in the circle.
That's
you got to reach out to those who are in that circle of untrustables.
That's true. So we sort of.
I feel like I trust Zach now.
We're evangelizing.
Yeah, the good news of SoundCloud. I don't know, man.
Our our Lord and Savior.
Our Lord and Savior SoundCloud, where you can comment right when the beat drops.
Yeah.
And you can say, oh, shit, oh, I'm running around my house right now.
Hennessy, you did it again.
So, week one.
Ooh.
Did you like it?
I did. It was a good mix of unexpected and also teams that you hoped would looking strong. What would you say caught you most off guard?
Probably the Bowling Green player who was waving his shoe in the air since no one would get him out of that situation. He took it upon himself to collapse. It was stricken down with a case of his shoe fell off. That was probably what caught me the most off guard. But as far as, you know, teams and performances, Texas A&M's defense, probably.
They were real good.
I you have high hopes for Chavis and Muschamp as well, flipping around those SEC West defenses. But even having high hopes for him eventually getting it right, I did not see it happening that quickly. We'll see if it can sustain, but, you know, for a week one, that was very impressive.
Meanwhile, we give John Hoke no credit for turning around that South Carolina defense.
I'll tell you what, man. Anytime the other team's quarterback gifts you two interceptions in place of touchdowns, that is nothing but X's and O's, my friend.
That's just getting after it. That's just wanting it more.
You just outcoached that other team.
That was, I will say, as much as a lot of things were surprising about week one, South Carolina winning a game in which they absolutely looked like ass is a tradition I embrace. They're your drunk uncle at Thanksgiving. You're like, oh, you can't change. This is just who you are.
We should probably nickname that game like the Hall of Fame game, like the NFL has. Just that detestable preseason opener that everyone's pumped for.
Right.
And then, like, the good players play about 8 minutes.
And yeah, I was going to say, much like the Hall of Fame game, it features a bunch of players that you probably won't watch after this.
Yeah, half these rosters aren't really going to do anything anyway.
Yeah. The thing that surprised me most was probably Stanford laying a hell of an egg against Northwestern.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that sort of continued things that had been, like, major looming problems. Like, I mean, how many times could that defense bail out that offense?
I agree.
Now that half that defense is gone?
I agree, and if Stanford had lost, like, 17-21, I maybe would buy that. Stanford scored 6 points.
Yeah.
Six.
Yeah.
That's pretty damn bad.
And that's with an experienced quarterback.
Man. Experience means nothing is the lesson.
Yeah, experience is really stupid.
Because Stanford trotted out a fourth-year quarterback?
Yeah. Meanwhile, Texas A&M is, you know, flipping between new guys and, you know.
And UCLA trotted out a true freshman.
UCLA sent out a player whose last game was high school.
He was born in 1997. What were you doing in 1997?
Let's see. I was wearing really big pants. I know that
Absolutely.
Much.
Absolutely. JNCO life.
Probably right around there. I might have been putting up with ska at that point.
Ooh, okay. I was gonna guess swing dancing.
Well, the girls really liked it, so you kind of had to, right. You know, you kind of had to familiarize yourself with it. But it wasn't anything like, you know, to be listened to.
So there's a substantial chance that Josh Rosen was conceived to ska music.
Yes.
Think
the
about that.
Mighty
shit.
Mighty Bosstones. UCLA owes a great debt to them.
So let's talk about a surprising thing that happened after week one, and that would be just earlier this evening, before we started recording, Texas made an interesting choice. Jason, can you explain what is going on and why Texas now has a orphanage worth of offensive coordinators?
Okay, so Charlie Strong came over to Texas, brought with him his boy from Louisville, Sean Watson, who replaced a previous offensive coordinator there. That's one offensive coordinator. He also poached Oklahoma State offensive line coach, who got the actual title offensive coordinator, and at some point also took the former play caller coordinator, some said, from Oklahoma, Jay Norville, as his receivers coach this past weekend due to only scoring 3 points at Notre Dame, the third straight game with 10 points or fewer. That Sean Watson is now quarterback's coach, wide receiver's coach, is now the play caller, and Texas fans seem to indicate that Wickline is no longer the coordinator, even though it's still his title. So in my eye, you have at least two offensive coordinators right now and three total for the season.
Approaching, yeah, I was going to say, it's approaching three. If we round up, it's three.
It's three different people have done things that anyone would think of as offensive coordinator things within the past 2 days. So
yeah, you know what the next step is after this, if things don't improve in, like, I don't know, just 3 weeks.
Yeah, just get rid of the whole offense.
Nah, Tim Beckman, bring him in.
Yeah, why not?
Fourth offensive coordinator.
Isn't he like a safeties coach? Isn't that his background?
I don't think that matters.
No, not at all.
I don't think that matters.
I'm just thinking
if
he'd be into it.
Oh, Tim Beckman's going to need that job.
He's into a lot of stuff. Like, he seems pretty agreeable. And
they got lasagna in Texas?
Well, you got to pay for it.
Well, that's fine. Yeah, I don't know. This is what scares me. Charlie Strong loses badly to Notre Dame. A Notre Dame team that maybe is really good. I don't think we totally know that. And God knows Notre Dame fans are not really eager to jump on that bandwagon.
No, they don't like it. They don't like it at all.
Don't look at me. I'm hideous.
It makes it really fun to say they're going to be good.
Right.
And also because Notre Dame games broadcast on NBC are excellent. Excellent appointment viewing. NBC. NBC Sports. Best in sports.
Boom, boom, boom.
But yeah, I think Notre Dame's going to be really good. I did not see them scoring 38 points on what was a top 10 defense. Go look at the numbers last year.
Yeah.
And you could say that, yeah, the defense didn't get any help from the offense, but still.
They averaged, Malik Zaire had three incompletions.
Yeah, Texas has big problems on both sides of the ball. The offense was pure ass. The defense was just, you know, off its game.
2% ass.
Yeah, not that Holman skim ass.
But it's just Charlie Strong's reaction to all of this, including this, hey, let's add a third offensive coordinator. It feels very Will Muschamp. Very Will Muschamp.
We'll see how this goes, I guess. But, like, what is the upside? Like, yeah. I mean, you know, maybe there's better play calling. But to me, that's secondary to development. You know, that's secondary to the players you're sending out there, and they still don't have a quarterback. It's the same quarterbacks going out there. They're just going to be throwing the different routes.
Well, it's kind of like they've decided to put on their own small version of The Bachelor. And Longhorn Network, if you're listening, you should absolutely turn this into your own personal version of The Bachelor. Because at the end of the day, they can't have three offensive coordinators next year, right? Like, at least one of these guys is getting fired. Or leaving for a different job.
Or maybe it goes great and two of them get better jobs elsewhere. No, that's not going to happen.
But, like, there's no sister wives outcome here.
No. There are co-OC situations. I mean, it worked pretty well for TCU last year.
Sure. I'll give you two. You're not getting three. Three's greedy.
That was with, you know, two guys who ran the same coherent system, you know, who very clearly had a clear vision that matched. Here we're talking about, like, one guy coming from Louisville where they just ran, like, let's score 11 points and hold the other team to 10. One coming from Oklahoma State, which runs everything, you know, and one coming from Oklahoma, which also runs everything. So, like, there is no common theme here at all, and that shows on the field. Maybe there's coherence going forward just as far as play calling go, but they still don't have an offensive line, and we have no clue if there's any hope at quarterback. So this will be fun.
Sweet. Staying in the Big 12, Jason Kirk. Was the Kansas State band making a dick?
You know, based on the visual evidence, it sure looked like it.
Yeah.
And then after their explanation, you go back and look pretty closely. And we had a story by James Dater at SB Nation where he actually, you know, looked at what an actual Starship Enterprise actually looks like. And there's sort of a dangling appendage there that just shouldn't be there.
Right.
And, like, this is actually a good band. This isn't the kind of band that would just fuck something like that up. Like, Roger Sherman found that they won some band award last year. Like, this is an actual competent band. So if something like that is messed up, you're gonna wonder if it was meant to be or not, and if it's flying right into your rival's mouth.
That's
pretty good evidence. And then when the school comes out and punishes the band director, doesn't say that was a dick, but hits him with that was a dick punishment. That was a dick. Like when I first saw it, it was like, oh, okay, this looks like they just messed it up, and right. It just happens to look funny, but. Right. Every single thing that's happened since then
suggests that it was a dick.
Just is another piece of evidence on the dick pile.
Here's my thing. If you know anything about space and spaceships, you know that most spaceships are pretty phallic. Like, you use an Apollo era rocket ship with boosters and all that, or even a space shuttle. It kind of looks like a dick, right?
Ooh, yeah.
They picked the spaceship in all of fiction that probably looks the least like a penis.
Yeah, I mean, isn't there one in Star Trek that's just a box?
Yeah, that sounds right. I don't know.
Okay, I guess that's also sexy too.
Somebody's real mad right now. It might be Zach. I'm sorry, Zach.
The thing that messes with the plausible deniability here is it wasn't shooting.
No.
It wasn't like firing missiles, even though that could have been a little
too sexy. That
could have
been misinterpreted as well.
But like, it wasn't. When in the world is a spaceship going to ram something? Then we all die. I mean, yeah. I get Kansas State hates Kansas and would probably be fine with that. But I just don't see any way that a spaceship would go ram a bird when you can just shoot it.
Especially a giant bird.
At Kansas Jayhawk. What's it going to do?
If you're a responsible spaceship captain and you're like, oh shit, there's a giant cartoon bird that looks vaguely like the racist birds from Dumbo, I think answer one is I should lie down.
You just said you just called the Jayhawk racist, and like every Mizzou fan just like got out of their chairs and started clapping.
I told you we're not the only ones with a problematic history.
And then they burn something down for no reason.
They burn something down.
About it. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. That's not what a responsible captain would do. He'd be like, hey, are y'all seeing this? That's a big bird, right? Should we ram it? I feel like ram it is not the first option.
Ram it in the mouth!
Ram it in the mouth!
Shove our spaceship down its throat! And shoot our way out. I don't know.
I don't know what happens next.
We'll figure it out once we get in there.
At that point. I mean, in fairness, it was not the worst thing that happened in Kansas on Saturday.
No. Ooh, it's a boy. Distant second.
Man. I will... You know what really sucks about how that game ended for Kansas?
What?
So, for those who weren't paying attention, Kansas lost to South Dakota State. Go Jackrabbits. When they were unable at the end of the game, I think down three, to spike the ball in South Dakota State territory because the snap was mishandled, and the quarterback going to retrieve the snap on what was supposed to be the clock-stopping play grabbed the ball with his knees on the ground. So obviously the clock ran. Kansas was not able to get a playoff after that. What sucks is that those refs, I'll be generous. I'll say 60% of the time, the minute the ball is snapped, they're blowing the whistle because they know what happens.
Yeah, this. I mean, of all the plays, this is the ultimate gimme play.
Like Pac-12 refs would have blown the play dead and maybe given them 10 yards as well. But these refs did their job right, and that fucked Kansas over big time.
The fact that they knew, wait, Kansas might fuck this up. And literally, the act of throwing the ball at the ground, that's an incomplete pass.
I hope like
that is fucking up on purpose. Kansas can't even fuck up on purpose.
I hope the side judge walked over to the head ref and was like, told you they'd fuck up.
I don't trust this team far as they can throw a football, which is the ground beneath them.
Told you they were running the fucky up offense. And they did. Speaking of terrible offenses that couldn't do anything right, let's talk about Penn State.
Oh.
Deep
disquiet in the pit of my stomach.
Man. I am putting together this week in Schadenfreude. Penn State is on there. You will not be surprised to learn.
Right.
There's a lot of talk on there about how Penn State fans really respect Matt Rhule, Temple head coach, for not running it up on them.
I missed that. In your story, I get it now.
Yeah.
Wow,
that's some good stuff.
Yeah,
I don't even have a joke. I don't have any comments or anything.
Now, where do you think Matt Rhule played his college football?
He did play for Joe Paterno, did he not?
He did. So even when Penn State loses, oh man, it's about the greatness of Penn State.
Joe Pa still, Joe brought him up right, didn't
he? The spirit lives even, if you lose to a Joe Pa boy, it's almost like you won, really.
Just feels like you won. Hey, that's another one for Joe.
It's an honorable death. James Franklin is
I think we got 410 now.
Yeah, I think that counts. That probably needs to count. But they did decide to do an interesting team building exercise today after the Temple game, in which they gave up 10 sacks, I believe it was, including
it was 10.
10 sacks.
Including one in which there were three down Temple linemen and one left the line.
Yeah.
There were Penn State had three times as many blockers as Temple had rushers. And potential number one draft pick Christian Hackenberg went. I feel like at this point, when you say potential number one draft pick Christian Hackenberg, that's like saying former number two USF.
Yeah,
it just feels like a funny thing to put in front of his name. That's kind of mean.
I am putting it in the way I am looking at it in the same way that like former Big Board number one member Matt Barkley. It feels that way. That's not good for you, Penn State. But they were so disgusted, so disturbed by this game, so disappointed in their own effort, that they went out to the practice field and they said, damn it, it's 2015. Get a shovel. We're going to bury this game tape.
Are there electronic copies?
I can't imagine there are. I can't imagine that it's all over the internet and the broadcasting rights already existed and were given to someone else. I can't imagine. Listen, if you're a Temple fan, how are you not inundating the Penn State Athletic Department with DVDs of this right now? Hey, man, I made a flip book.
Flying, if Temple has any sort of an aerial presence, an Air Force, a balloon, a Zeppelin, anything, just go bomb that practice field with DVDs.
Hey, man, you need a mini disc? I got that.
People can still see it. People can still see it.
Hey, this is on iOmega Zip. You're welcome. Like, just send it to them in every format possible. Oh, you like them big floppies, the 5 1/4? Yep, got it on that. It took about 30, but it's all there.
I do kind of feel, though, like if you watch it, it's probably like watching The Ring. Like, that's probably why they got rid of it. Like, if you actually sit down and try to watch Penn State's offense,
sure.
Like, I don't know what crawls out of the screen at you, but it's going to take a while because it's only going to gain like 1 yard at a time, but eventually it's going to get to you.
Here's the thing, though. If you had a cursed item like the game tape of losing to Temple and getting completely destroyed on the offensive line, burying it is a choice, and I understand that. But why would you bury it where you live? Why would you bury it at your house? Like, that's the dumbest shit I've ever heard. That's like, horror movies don't work that way. You hide it somewhere else so that unsuspecting campers, I don't know, maybe a Rutgers, comes upon it and says, hey, let's watch this tape. And then they're all dead.
I don't know. Maybe that way you can keep an eye on it. I don't know. You know, whatever emerges from it, you can see it that way.
That's true.
And it's only going to lumber and shuffle. It's not anything that's going to, like, you know, really dart at you. It's just going to... You got time to finish practice.
So it's of the Jason school. The horror monster, not the you, I should make clear. Although, now that I think about it, Jason does have the same... Like, he probably loves Arkansas and Utah. They just keep coming. They just do their job quietly and just keep coming. Not about speed.
Yeah, that's true.
Not about just being about unstoppable and avenging, I don't know, your mother's death? It's unclear. I didn't watch these films.
He went to hell.
He did go to hell and space. Just like Kansas State.
We're talking about Penn State.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, here's another one where, how does this get better? And, like, one thing is, yeah, they're facing Temple, which is a really, really gross matchup for Penn State because right. There's no upside. Like, Penn State's biggest weakness, the offensive line, matches up really terribly with the mid-major team's defense that is, like, legit good and returned everybody.
Right.
So, like, there's no way for that not to be embarrassing. you still don't want to give up 27 points and you want to score more than 10, but like there was no way for this to go impressively for Penn State.
No.
But like surely there are some other Big Ten teams with defense as good as Temple's.
Yeah. It's gonna be an interesting season.
You might want to take a look at that game film, whether it's cursed or not.
Here's the shit. If you're Penn State and you're thinking like, I think we gotta fire our offensive coordinator, who are you gonna hire? They're all at Texas now.
They're hoarding the dang market.
They're hoarding. It's like the Oregon Trail. You're gonna have to trade some wagon axles and some clothing. Brutal.
That's a Steve Patterson move right there. Offensive coordinators, $8.95.
Or best offer. You want to do some reader questions before we get to week two?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, you got one you want to start with, or you want me to throw it out?
Yeah, I'll let's see. I'll hit one that's just a good comment, and okay. Then I'll hit a question from G Butter Snaps Brendan_11. Do you think Louisville wearing Meemaw's decorative plates as helmets sets a bad precedent for player safety? I'm just gonna say it's a good way to describe those helmets. They did look like that. If you didn't see them, go look them up. Also from Joka Strength on Twitter, who is this year's 2007 USF? I forgot I already mentioned them, but this year's a 2007 USF show.
Oh man, you said it three times. Now they're
this,
totally
this
gonna
being
get
the
us.
Team that comes out of absolutely nowhere to rank way up high. That was the year where Kansas and Mizzou and West Virginia and various other teams also ranked up there. But there's that. That's not the craziest thing in the world. Right. I guess Kansas is, but USF is like is this even a real school at that point?
Yeah.
And this point, sorry,
Jim Levitt. Oh. He did some things.
So this year, you know, you need three things here. You need probably a non-power. You need a team with just a schedule that just sneaks up on you, you know, where that you just look up and holy shit, this team's got 10 wins. And you need, you know, an actually good team. The three contenders I see, one is basically the same as last year. It's Marshall.
Okay.
The only problem being that they still don't have any actually good teams. They just got past Purdue.
Barely.
And that's not going to count for much unless right. Purdue really surprises and is a bowl team. The other two, each would have to pull an upset. There's Navy at Notre Dame, and there's Appalachian State at Clemson.
Ooh.
I think both of those teams are really good.
Okay.
Navy, when I do my bowl projections each week, I got a board where I keep track of wins and losses. And it is hard finding enough losses for Navy not to be a top 25 team.
That's right.
Unless they get upset at some point. There's at Notre Dame, at Memphis, at Houston. If they win one of those games, then it seems pretty likely to me they're a 10-2 team. So let's just say Navy upsets Notre Dame, which they've done before.
Mm-hmm.
There's a very good chance that at the end of the year, the playoff committee is like, what the fuck do we do with Navy?
What do we do with Navy?
We can't let this team in.
Especially because they won't. They technically, I believe, the playoff committee makes all its decisions before the Army-Navy game, right?
Right. They've worked out a contingency for this, like this offseason, where if Navy is in the running, they're just going to wait.
So it's a self-fulfilling prophecy, man.
They're going to wait to make sure they beat Army, which, okay. But, yeah, I mean, I can really see Navy going on a pretty good run.
Okay.
You know, they usually seem to have one or two games where just the same thing happens to them as they do to other teams.
Right.
It's like, you shouldn't have lost that game. But they got a good quarterback. You know, they can beat anybody. But let's see. The other team is App State, and, you know, they return a ton. They really turned it on last year. If they find a way to upset Clemson, I guess this week, you know, that's a Clemson that – still a little iffy at quarterback. We don't know if he can stay healthy. He's only had a few really good games. They just lost their best receiver, still replacing a ton on defense. We're not going to pick App State, but if App State gets past Clemson, the table's pretty set. That's their only hard non-conference game. So I would say I would throw out those three as the likeliest contenders.
All right, I'm going to throw out one more just because I'm a dick. Florida International. Boom. Yeah, they just beat UCF. They play Indiana this week.
Oh.
And then after that, like, it's just the rest of their Conference USA schedule, which has some teams on it. You know, they will have to play Louisiana Tech and all everything quarterback Jeff Driskel.
Uh-huh.
They will have to play Marshall. They will have to play Old Dominion.
Oof.
Which went into Eastern Michigan and ground out a win.
I mean, if you can drag UCF into the deep water and come out with a 15-14 win, I mean, UCF's about as good as any of those teams, Indiana included. So,
damn, that's cold.
What, UCF? I'm sorry, that's probably rude to USF, UCF, but.
That's fine. I understand what you're doing. Okay, let's go with this question. This is from Pete Mortensen, at More Pete. Why is FSU ducking Northwestern?
Been wondering that.
You know, it's a good question, because who do the Noles have in the out-of-conference this year? They just beat Texas State.
Sheesh. I'll tell you what, any FSU fan who's making fun of Ohio State's schedule should be quiet.
Look carefully at their own. So they just beat Texas State.
Yeah.
They're going to play USF.
Mm-hmm.
And then the rest of the season, they have the following road games. Boston College, Wake Forest, Georgia Tech, which, yeah, that's okay. Legit. Clemson, yeah, that's mm-hmm. legit. And Florida, which, no.
Nah.
No. So, yeah. I'm not wildly impressed by this schedule as either.
And when do they go to Chicago's true Big Ten team?
Ooh, does not happen. They could have on Saturday, November 21st, when they don't have a conference opponent. You know who they're playing instead? Chattanooga. If Florida State has an ounce of character, an iota of self-respect and love of the game, they will cancel that game with Chattanooga and play Northwestern.
Go to Chi-Raq, son.
Make it happen.
That's not even halfway to Chicago.
Yeah.
Even if you walk it back to actually Evanston, which is not Chicago.
Shh, don't do this.
Sorry.
Don't do this. Jason, do you have one more question for us?
Yes, let's see here. From Jake Whitaker, at Jake Whitaker. How many SEC teams will schedule Lightning Storm for a non-conference game? Of course, Lightning Storm is the team that battled Florida to a draw last year, and this year held up impressively against LSU. Is currently 0-0 after a two-game tour through the SEC.
Lightning Storm has yet to be scored upon.
I think the fact that Lightning Storm, due to its own conference schedule, can only have four conference games means the answer is four. It's just going to be just the maximum possible amount of teams going after Lightning Storm. Did you see the LSU? Their AD is claiming they're going to lose, I think, 1.5 to 3 million due to Lightning Storm, based on according to how much they can get back from the insurance.
Yeah, but think about how much Lightning Storm is going to use that money to build its facilities, improve its recruiting.
Listen, I hate when people talk down on not scheduling Lightning Storm, because entire local communities depend on Lightning Storm having those funds come through from the bigger programs.
That's
right. That funds a lot of scholarships.
That's absolutely true. I mean, I know several people who went to Lightning Storm. They're good folks. I just respect the hell out of them. They are made of static. I should point that out.
They're so fast, though. So goddamn fast.
So goddamn fast. Let's do one more question before we get to week two. This is from some guy, that is his handle, on Twitter, at AGD03. His question, I am an Aggie. How much longer can I enjoy the ongoing clown show at Texas without becoming a bad person? I think this is a pretty easy question. And the answer is, as long as you don't play them, keep enjoying it. As somebody who has been on both sides of a declining rivalry, both the team watching the formerly great rival sort of wither away and the withering away team, it only eats at you because that rivalry is something you watch every year, and you would, in some part of you, like it to be good, or like that team to be good, so that if you whip them 42-3, it means something. It's not just beating up on a shitty team that barely makes a bowl game.
Yeah, it actually hurts them.
But A&M and Texas ain't playing. So
yeah, you got to go get something.
So it literally doesn't impact you in a meaningful way. So just keep hating.
This is like when the U.S. and Russia wouldn't sell it on the field.
That's right.
So all they had was message board battles in the Caribbean and Southeast Asia.
Mm-hmm. And, they boycotted each other's Olympics. I'm not saying Texas A&M should organize its own Olympics games and not invite Texas. But I am saying that'll get on SEC Network.
Let's see, A&M. I mean, I'm trying to find a reason why A&M would not be Russia and Texas would not be America, and that's not a compliment to Texas.
No, necessarily. And it's not necessarily a diss to Texas A&M.
Right, right. I just see, like, you know, the rigid, you know, culture of A&M. You know, I can just picture Putin, like, marching with the cadets and all that, and like worshiping a dog just seems like something. And, like, you know,
hey, Laika was the first, you know, first collie in space.
And then, like, Texas, all they give a shit about is money, you know,
right?
And, like, not actually caring about anything, kind of just showing up, you know. So anyway, yeah. At this point, Texas thinks they have scoreboard over A&M because the last time they played football, Texas won. But I think anyone who's been paying attention knows that A&M has scoreboard at this point. They have not played each other. But, like, everything that has happened since then has gone A&M's way. So to me, if you're an A&M fan, have no shame at all.
Yeah.
Piling on until they can't take it anymore and they actually play, because then it would be good for everybody.
If anything, room for them to get worse, because then A&M can colorably say, oh, we don't play Texas because we don't want to water down our schedule. And goddamn, wouldn't that feel great if you're an Aggie fan?
Oh my god, if A&M's AD came out and said,
"No, we think
we play one challenging team non-conference that year, and otherwise we felt it would be good to share the Aggie love, get you know, with some of these smaller programs around the state.
We just felt NC State was a more competitive program for us to face.
Hey, listen, we play Sam Houston State, Rice, and Texas. It's just good to support local programs. We're big fans of Texas football, and we do what we can to enrich it throughout the state, no matter how far away it may be from quality militaristic cult discipline.
It doesn't matter if they play in a big conference or in a conference at all, or whatever Texas is in at this point.
Hey, listen, even if they're an independent, like our friends in Austin.
You say independent, we say poor homeless man. They're essentially the same thing.
They're kind of a rich homeless man. Like, they just got a really great Winnebago, but nowhere to put it.
No gas and no wheels.
Because they basically got a battleship that's, like, stuck in a canyon.
You laugh, but they would absolutely take that at quarterback right now. Put battleship in!
Canyon,
hey, man.
Canyon battleship.
Swoops isn't working out. Put canyon battleship in. Let him give him a shot, at least. He's literally a battleship stuck in a canyon. Whatever, can't be worse than Swoops. And that was my Texas impression. I love you, Longhorn fans. Jason, let's look at week two. A shrill, like, we have, this is what happened. We got on the interstate of week one, and we hit the gas, baby. We were flying. It felt great. Wind was in our hair. We were listening to the alt-rock song of our choice. Things are wonderful. Week two, oh man, yeah, it's a little backed up on the interstate.
This is this week really goes to show how bullshit the first month or so of this sport is, because week one it was like, yeah, there's, like, you know, six really good games, and then a bunch of stuff where you kind of hope a cool vine emerges. This week, that with the really good games, it's not quite six, but maybe we'll get even more vines.
All right, let's agree on what the actual good games are on this schedule. In no particular order, one of them is Mississippi State LSU, correct?
Yeah, I'd put that up there. Mississippi State looks fine, looks decent, and LSU got tripped up by lightning storm.
Got tripped up by lightning
excited
storm.
To see how they do against a less formidable opponent.
Oklahoma, Tennessee has some promise, although unclear, as our previous call-in guest Zach pointed out, how good Tennessee's defense is at this juncture.
I would agree that game is up there. That would be good no matter what.
Right. The best game is probably Oregon, Michigan State.
Sure. Might be the biggest game of the season far. So
also both teams with more questions than they had at this point when they played last year.
Sure.
But that has potential to sort of be a each team picking apart the other's weaknesses, so I don't necessarily have a problem with that. But I don't know, Boise State, BYU might be good. It's a real big question what BYU does now that they have lost their quarterback again, and Boise State didn't look all that great dispatching with Washington at home.
It's sort of the junior Oregon-Michigan State, because it's two teams where it's like, yeah, I don't know if they looked all that good in week one. Like, even BYU, you know, they scored the win in Nebraska, but probably shouldn't have. Yeah, it's a... And then, like, the fifth biggest game, I mean...
You know what it is. You know what it is.
I don't want to say it.
You know what it is.
I know what it is.
4:45 in the p.m. in the Eastern time zone.
That's not noon?
No, man.
It's not at like 11:30 Eastern, man, 10 a.m. local?
This is prime early bird dinner.
Man, the CVS game is doomed.
Yeah, you go to your local hibachi restaurant, you ask them, put on El Asico. And they will. And then they'll flip a shrimp right into your cocktail.
It'll
right
already
into your
be
drink.
On.
Iowa at Iowa State. Whew. Now,
this is the fifth biggest game of the weekend.
Unquestionably. It's not even like we say a lot of dumb things on the Fullcast.
This just is.
This just is.
Like, they both won their games last week against pretty good FCS teams, and they both looked fine doing it. And they hate each other and kind of won't admit it or whatever, but... This is the fifth biggest game of the weekend. That's amazing.
So I'm on StubHub right now for this game. This game is being played in Ames at Jack Trice Stadium. Give me a rough section of the stadium that you would be interested in. Tell me if you want to sit 50-yard line, if you want to sit somewhere in one of the corners, lower bowl, upper bowl, and I'm gonna see how accurately you can guess what a ticket is going for on StubHub.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you where I like to sit. I like to sit corner upper, like very first row right there.
Okay.
To me, that's like it's like a perfect perch over everything.
All right, so we're gonna put you in section B, and you wanna be pretty far down in that row, right?
Yeah, as close as I can get.
So I can do row 10 for you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. How much are you willing to pay per ticket? For upper corner, 10th row, at El Asico.
How much am I willing to pay?
Yeah. What do you think is fair market price? I'm going to quote you the lowest available.
Okay. Let's say it's going for $80.
$150.
I was halved.
Give me one more. Let's try this. Let's see if you can do a little better.
I'll do the opposite corner.
Okay. So you still want to sit in the other corner? You want to sit low as well, right?
Give me dead center on the 50. Close as I can get.
But you want to be upper or lower deck?
Lower. Oh, I want to smell it.
You want the good seats. Okay. All right. So we're going to put you in section 8. That's pretty good. I can get you to... You want to be row 4 or you want to be a little further back than that?
I'll take 4, yeah.
All right. You ready, buddy? How much are you paying for these primo? Section 8, row 4... Beautiful. The Asico, El Asico is yours. How much are you paying per ticket?
I'm going to guess $375.
Ooh, you overbid a little. $340.
Oh, pretty close.
$340. The lowest price, by the way, for any ticket, according to StubHub, which is not a sponsor, although if they want to throw us money, that's great, $98 to get into El Asico.
Good God.
So if you and a buddy want to go to see Iowa, Iowa State, just to get in the door, that's 200 big ones.
These people care.
They care a lot. And you know what?
The Cy-Hawk trophy is at stake.
You know who else is going to be there, right?
Yes. someone who has also defeated an FCS opponent, so to speak. That's Mr. Donald Trump
that's
is going
right.
to be in the house.
Someone who knows who understands, you know... It's good that tickets for this game are all in the triple digits.
So premium.
Because
to keep Donald out the rabble.
Donald Trump really understands what tasteful uses of money are. What
Elastico
good investments
is a premium product that the haters and the losers just can't understand.
Everyone loves Iowa, Iowa State. Who doesn't?
Boise State BYU is a disgusting game full of feminists.
Full of Rosie O'Donnell is at the Oregon game this weekend. I would be very in favor of Donald Trump purchasing rights to El Asico
and
just renaming it like Trump Bowl.
Trump Bowl. That's exactly what he would call
Trump
it.
Trump Bowl.
And the trophy is, I guess you get to meet him or something.
Yeah, you get to fly around with a helicopter in him for 5 minutes. and that's it.
Over Iowa.
And then he lists his favorite biblical characters. Well, I love Xenomorph Queen. She's great.
This is so Iowa.
Very Iowa. Is there any other game that we should talk about in week two?
Good God.
Let's do this. Find me one game that might be sneaky interesting. I realize this is hard. I realize I didn't prep you at all for this.
There is... Okay. Toledo, Arkansas. And I say this not just because I'm an Arkansas fan. Right. Toledo should be pretty good. They should have a decent defense, and they should have a sort of a MAC-grade offense. Mm-hmm. And Arkansas, I feel like they look good against UTEP, but I feel like we don't quite know their passing game, and we don't quite know if their defense is fortified after losing a bunch. So the Rockets could put some points up. It's about as far as I'll go there, but... Okay. Let's see. Notre Dame at Virginia. I mean, Virginia just got lit up by another young quarterback and will probably put up even fewer points against Notre Dame. Probably, but you never know. Kentucky, South Carolina.
That was the one I was hoping you'd pick.
We have two. The SEC is probably SEC's two greatest chaos teams.
Right.
Would you say that?
Yeah, I think that the potential for complete anything is there with both of those.
I mean, I feel like Auburn is,
especially when they play
Auburn's a chaos team, but they're actually good.
Right.
These two teams, it's just like, I don't know what's going to happen, but it's going to be weird.
Right. There's one more game I want to highlight here, and that's at 3:30. And I believe our colleague and good friend and former mystery guest, Brian M. Floyd, is going to this game.
Oh, no.
As Washington State at Rutgers.
Don't do it.
Brian.
Mm-hmm.
Buddy.
Well, now they were talking about the Wazoo that just lost to Portland State.
Right.
After the first half, they decided, you know what? Fine, we'll do it your way. We'll run the ball. We'll run the ball like 25 times. We'll barely even throw it. And then, well, that didn't work, did it? That was just illogical.
We're only up 10-0. That's not enough.
Clearly, that didn't work. We better get back to what we do.
Yeah. So.
And heading up to play Rutgers.
Piscataway.
Which I think in the past, what, month or so, Rutgers has lost, what, like four defensive backs?
Yeah, they're...
Including their best one?
The one... Oh, man.
So, poor Kyle Flood. If he gets out there, like, playing Wazoo ball, that could be dangerous, I don't...
But they just lost to, a meh FCS team. And Rutgers is Rutgers, but Rutgers just tuned the shit out of an FCS team.
Based on the FCS precedent, this is going to go bad for the Cougs.
Like, Brian, I don't know if you're listening to this. Don't do this.
Can you drink in Rutgers Stadium legally?
Are you suggesting that Wazoo fans care about the legal?
I mean,
part?
I know they will. I'm just trying to figure.
I don't believe they have alcohol sales in the stadium. No.
Okay.
But it also, security's not super heavy.
Do you think that Coug fans will, let's see. So I've never been in right around that area. You've scouted it out yourself.
Oh, it's beautiful. I've been twice.
How do you think the alcohol
broken.
Reserves will hold up to angry Coug fans?
I can tell you that Rutgers fans are wholly unprepared for what is going to happen.
Yeah, that's all I'm interested in here. That's my key matchup is the Rutgers liquid reserves.
It's entirely possible that midway through the game, if Rutgers is winning, Washington State will forcibly commandeer part of the stadium and turn it into a microbrewery. And just never relinquish it. We'll just be like, yeah, you want to go to a Rutgers game? We can also get some really good Rebel brew.
We'll also get some Washington alcohol.
What? That's the name? Yeah, that's the name of it.
So we didn't want to take the time to name it. We're busy drinking it.
They're so fucking depressed they didn't want to name it. Washington alcohol. Because you'll all die one day.
Go Cougs.